Hey guys, welcome back to Defining Truth, episode 52. America just unveiled its newest weapon in the skies, the F-47 sixth generation fighter jet. Meanwhile, the culture war rages on at home, with CARE suing Columbia University, Elon Musk meeting with the Pentagon, and Casey DeSantis eyeing the governor's seat. The lines are being drawn, and we're breaking it all down. This is Defining Truth. All right, guys, well, welcome back to episode 52. Got lots going on in the news this week. We're going to break it down for you. And right off the bat, about 2 hours ago, the White House posted on its official channels the development of the F-47, the United States Air Force forthcoming sixth generation fighter jet. You guys have to look this up if you haven't seen it. It looks like a spaceship. It's developed under the Next Generation Air Dominance Program, that's NGAD. On March 21st, President Donald Trump announced that Boeing has been awarded the contract to build this advanced aircraft, which is set to replace the aging F-22. There's plenty of information about it online. There's some dev photos and videos on YouTube. You should check it out. It's boasting some incredible things, including advanced stealth capabilities. It incorporates this cutting edge stealth tech to minimize detection by enemy radars. Obviously, that's been around for a while. Going back to the 80s, with the F-17 or 117. So I'm curious to see what they mean by cutting edge. So this is obviously going to be incredible. Also, enhanced sensor fusion. It's equipped with these sophisticated sensors that integrate data from various sources, providing pilots with comprehensive situational awareness. I'm assuming all of that jargon insinuates that advanced super intelligence will be a part of this aircraft. And man and unmanned teaming. This is where we get a little sci-fi with this. It's designed to operate seamlessly alongside autonomous drones. Think about robot fighter jets as your wingman, allowing for coordinated missions and expanded operational flexibility. And lastly, it's got this extended range and payload. It features improvements in range and payload capacity over its predecessors, enabling it to conduct longer missions and carry more advanced weaponry. So, you know, long story short, this is going to be a super weapon. It's been in development for several years. They've had a couple experimental versions undergoing secret testing. We all know those sites out in the desert. Air Force aims to begin fielding the F-47 in the early 2030s. So we're about 5 years off still or more. And that'll ensure continued air superiority in the face of evolving global threats. As you may have guessed, we're not the only ones working on tech like this. So that's the most breaking news as of a couple hours ago, Brandon. And then let's get into a couple of the week's headlines, starting with Casey DeSantis. Brandon, what do you got on what she's doing over there in Florida?
Yeah. So it sounds like, this week, her husband, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis made some comments that she could potentially run, after his term is up. What did you see on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think she intends to, is what it sounds like. I mean, I think it could signal the continuation of a DeSantis style conservatism there in Florida. As we know, Florida is one of the most influential red states in the country. And the push for her to run is kind of a challenge to the left's narrative about conservative women in leadership. Which is really interesting. I mean, so let's talk real quick about what would a Casey DeSantis campaign mean for Florida's future. I'll start off. I think it could be huge. I mean, she's articulate, sharp, unapologetically conservative. She's anti everything the left tries to frame conservative women as. She's been front and center on initiatives that resonate with the base, like mental health, education reform, family values, a huge one across the nation. I think she could continue Florida's trajectory as a national model for conservative leadership. And I think that's the right place to do it. Imagine if we can kick this off and just completely obliterate the left's narrative on women and their role in leadership. And I think it could be pivotal. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. It'll be interesting to see how the media treats her differently than Ron DeSantis. I'm guessing that it's going to be more of the same. Typically, if you don't like the husband, you're not going to like the wife. And if she continues down the same conservative pathway of strong family values and valuing education, I can't imagine that she'll be any more popular from the left in regards to her political standpoint.
Oh, I think they'll be vicious. I mean, they'll go after her just as hard as they do anyone else. In fact, we've seen that. You know, we have examples of what they do to anyone, man or woman, when you dare to stand up for truth in this country. I mean, think about Amy Baron Cohen, what she went for in her process to reach SCOTUS. And you know, there's many others. But yeah, this would be a big one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure that has there ever been a husband wife duo to go back to back on a governorship?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I mean, yeah, there's other duos in politics, as we know. You know, think of like the Clintons, but
yeah.
But I'm not aware of anyone who's, you know, I don't know anyone's husband who was the governor and then the wife took over and ran. I mean,
well, there is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, right? Her father was the governor and then she became governor, or like
daughter,
the Bushes. Daughter. I'm just curious, like, if this is just kind of something that he threw out there. Maybe it's kind of like a temperature test, because everybody's been talking about Michelle Obama running for president for years and it never happened. So I wonder if that was his way to kind of like set the bait and see if anybody had interest in her running again.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of mystery surrounding Michelle Obama, if you know what I mean. We're not too sure what's going on there. I do think you can expect hit pieces against her. I think they would be more disguised as like profiles. It's the classic double standard from the media. She'll be labeled as dangerous for holding mainstream conservative values, especially her family values and those perspective. It's predictable. They always are. But if she's prepared, she can handle it. I think this is going to be one to watch. Honestly, it could change the whole dynamic for the GOP heading into 2026 and beyond. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. So, all right, next up, next headline is Trump's plan to de-woke American institutions. What do we mean by that?
Yeah, so it sounds like President Trump is rolling out a broader strategy to pull federal funding from institutions that promote, quote, woke ideology. Whether it's in the arts, universities, or media, he's calling for those dollars to instead support values rooted in faith, freedom, and patriotism.
Common sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, so why does it matter? Because, I mean, and we've talked about this actually a lot, you know, prior to today. We always say Trump is the left's birth child, right? This is a direct response to decades of cultural drift, where taxpayers have unknowingly funded institutions working against traditional American values. In fact, we're going to talk about that at the end of these headlines today with NGOs. But Trump's move reframes the culture war as a policy battle. Now, we've been harping on this for years. This is something that the left has always known. They win battles at the culture war effort. And you and I have complained so many times about how mainstream Republicans have completely turned a blind eye to the culture war. They dismiss it as not useful, a waste of time. And we have experienced decades of cultural loss because of that ignorance. This is the exact opposite.
Well, and to that point, just real quick, I think Paul Ryan is probably the first politician that learned that lesson when he made a comment asking, I forget exactly how he framed it, but he was basically he said the culture war didn't matter. And I haven't heard from him in quite some time. So I think he was probably very wrong about that. And we know that it matters because they target these places like universities. And I mean, now they're going down to children as far as 5 years old. So I think it's silly. I'm glad that the Republican Party is finally waking up. I think it's silly to watch your enemy continually target a demographic, whether it's young people or whoever it is, and not think that there should be some sort of counterbalance there. I mean, I have recently been on a college campus, and I mean, it was just a cesspool of liberal indoctrination. So,
well, and the question always comes up, right? How do you draw the line between funding free expression and promoting harmful narratives? It's an age old debate, similar to the, you know, freedom versus security debate, but this is very prevalent domestically now. And let's just pause and think about that for a minute. So the question is, how do we draw the line between funding free expression and promoting harmful narratives? So practically, what am I saying?
Well, let's use the example of the guy from last week, Mahmoud Khalil, right? Okay, so it's one thing to support Palestine, right? There's plenty of people at UC Berkeley who support Palestine. They go and they protest. But when you start to dive deeper or get more involved in organizations that are closely tied to funding or participating in terrorism, like, for example, CARE, potentially funds or has been linked to funding from Hezbollah and other organizations, that's sort of where the line, your free speech is no longer free if it's now infringing on somebody else's rights or person. So there's a difference between going out and saying, free Palestine, or participating in meetings that are being organized by Hamas or other terrorist organizations.
Sure. Well, especially when these ideologies and activities are directly contributing to the dismantling of the American way of life.
Yeah.
I mean, to put it into, a different perspective, imagine that, it's like a sports team where each side is trying to win, and you have some of the other other side of the field, right? The other team, they figure out that the team they're playing is this like globalist free for all type mentality. And they're like, hey, instead of trying to like win or score a goal, why don't I just go over to their side, change my shirt, and just repeatedly kick the ball, and score a goal for my own team from the inside. It's the insider threat mentality. I mean, via education, this is what America's enemies have done. They're taking advantage of the American institutions and freedoms that we enjoy to systematically dismantle our way of life. That's exactly what Trump is talking about when he's talking about de-woking American institutions. We can articulate clearly a anti-American effort to destroy the United States using our education system and the media and social media and private corporations, and the list goes on and on and on and on. So where do we draw that line? I mean, I think it's pretty clear. I do not think that you should be allowed to carry out anti-American activities within the United States using taxpayer dollars, right?
Well, and that's the big kicker, is using taxpayer dollars, right? And then and then how much is the education institution involved? Because like you said, it's the age old question, right? Like everybody wants to be free, and we should be free. That's a unique opportunity that we have being Americans in the United States. But then where is that balance? Because this is not the first time that we've dealt with this. We dealt with this during the Cold War, where you had Russian spies basically coming over and pretending to be Americans and infiltrating, the FBI and different institutions in government. So what is that fine balance? We saw it in 2001, shortly after with the Patriot Act, right? Everybody loves their freedom until it comes for the time for the government to, look at your cell phone or whatever the case may be. So again, I think you really have to look at what is the, you have to dive deeper. Like I said, there's a difference between somebody, who's just a woke leftist that, wants to go free Palestine, on the streets at a protest, and somebody who is, participating in anti-American actions that are anti-American, right? Well, and could affect,
You're 100% correct. And extremes are useful to demonstrate these things. So like, let's give an extreme example. This would be like, do you have the freedom to be like a Klan member here in the United States and be super racist? Do you have the individual freedom to live that way? Fine. You have the freedom to do so. You also don't have any rights to, have people endorse you or support you. You can be a weirdo.
Or you don't have the right to go murder people, right. on that.
So by comparison, though, to finish my example, is the difference here is imagine now a state-funded university teaching Klan members and racism with taxpayer dollars, right? Wouldn't we draw the line there? And this is exactly what the left has done in this country. They are propagating anti-American propaganda, information, ideology with real world consequences, and then screaming freedom of speech when someone tries to stop them. That's no different than the Klan member saying, well, I should be able to go to the university and use taxpayer dollars to teach people that we should kill other races. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
So that's the line.
Right. And free speech, it's either free speech for everybody or nobody has free speech, because to that point, right, at the school that I went to, if you were on the left, like say there was Students for Justice in Palestine, which I didn't even know prior to college what Palestine was. But they were tabling 24/7. And then you had Students for Israel right across from them, right? the students in Justice for Justice in Palestine could bring whatever, you know, Muslim speaker that they wanted. But when it came time for like, my group, the College Republicans, we tried to bring a pretty, well-known speaker at the time. There's all these hoops that you suddenly have to jump through. They wanted tens of thousands of dollars in security fees. Actually, at the time, I didn't know you. I wish I did, because they told us that, this is crazy. They actually told us that in order to put on the event, we would need 20 bomb sniffing dogs to clear,
oh my gosh,
this hall. And so I didn't know any different, right? I've learned a lot about security and, you know, that whole thing in the last couple of years. So I just thought like, well, okay, we'll go get 20 bomb sniffing dogs. Well, even the liberal editor of the school newspaper at the time thought that that was weird. So he called several different agencies. And of course you know this already, but he called several different agencies in San Diego County. There's like not even 20 bomb sniffing canines in San Diego County.
No.
And they wanted us to bring them in for an event on campus. Like, it was just totally, like, they just threw a number out of the air.
And they're just gaslighting you. That's saying, sure, you can have your protest when you give me $10 billion.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. So there needs to be, like I said, it's either for everybody or for nobody.
Yeah. All right, well, next up on the headline is Texas AG Ken Paxton sues Copel ISD over CRT. Now, that's a lot of acronyms. So let's remember, critical race theory was the extreme cultural Marxism that swept through high schools and places of education all throughout the country. It's met with a lot of resistance because it's garbage. You and I were part of an event here locally where we live dealing with CRT in schools. It was extremely racist, anti-American propaganda that seeks to exploit differences between people for destructive reasons. So the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, he just filed a lawsuit claiming the district is still teaching elements of critical race, which was banned in Texas public schools. Now, here's just one example of something that we've actually seen across the country since this administration took over. And that is, we're passing laws, we're doing it the right way, and there have been multiple instances of states, counties, and cities just completely ignoring the directives. Right. And just say, no, we're just going to continue to be socialist. We're going to continue to be super racist. Or the worst part, we're going to continue to propagate lies like BLM, which is a horrifying organization, very evil, atheist at its core, Marxist in practice, wasteful to the tune of millions of dollars that they kept for themselves and bought fancy houses. And not to mention all the damage and violence that occurred in protests. And so these organizations just continue to do what they're doing. And so now Texas AG is suing because parents and leaders have fought really hard to remove CRT from schools, but districts continue to use these buzzwords like equity and they sneak it back in, right? So their excuse is like, well, we're not teaching CRT. We're just teaching all of the principles contained in CRT. This case could set a precedent for enforcement actually nationwide. And that's why it's news this week, because if Texas is successful in stopping this little clown trick they're trying to pull, then it'll set court precedent for everywhere else in the country. So anyways, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, well, and here's the question, right? Because we dealt with this exact situation right here locally. How should states enforce CRT bans when you do have a school that tries to work around them? Because what happened, let's do the reverse that happened here in Temecula, right? They banned CRT and the state's answer was, well, we're just going to pull your funding and we're going to tell all the parents, who, by the way, are your voters,
over $1 million,
that you don't have funding for the school, so kids can't learn. So how do we battle? I guess the good news, like I said, is this is kind of the opposite end, but then as the Texas Attorney General, you go to a school who bans CRT, what's the punishment that doesn't also interfere with kids learning? I mean, I guess you could quickly provide funding to get new books, which was different from here in California where they were withholding funding. You could give the school funding in this case. What do you think?
Well, I mean, really what we need is a newer, cleaner version of the Committee on American Activities. Like, we need to rightfully point out and identify America's enemies from within, because as we discuss frequently, it's bad. These people that hate our country are using every possible means, cultural and governmental, to see their dreams come to fruition of this like progressive Marxist America. And until we call it for what it is, we're not fighting on the same battle space. Like, you know, as we just talked about, Republicans have been unwilling for a long time to really even enter the culture war. And we have paid a heavy price for that. So this is a great example. We have to stop them and properly identify them and say, look, it's not freedom to destroy your own country. You know, anybody who's ever been in the military or sought a security clearance, gone through a deep, you know, full scope background, a lot of the questions in there are regarding your thoughts and activities in regards to the U.S. government. So for example, they'll ask something like, you know, have you ever been part of an organization whose intention was to overthrow the U.S. government or to subvert it, et cetera? And those questions are there for a reason, because we're trying to identify America's enemies. Well, unfortunately, as we've said in the past, if you were to ask your average Democrat, they wouldn't pass a background check, because everything that they do, ideologically speaking, on the political field or spectrum, is against that question. They are trying to subvert the United States government. They're trying to restructure the country, our faith, our values, our way of life, our constitution, and they're not very secretive about it. I mean, they're really open about it. So yes, a lawsuit is like a bare minimum response, in my opinion. Like that's the lowest level. We have to immediately respond and stop progressive Marxism in its tracks, because unfortunately we got a lot of catching up to do over the last few decades. So, all right, well, the next lines is Tudor Dixon eyes another run in Michigan. All right, let's get into why this is important. Some of you may be thinking, who the heck is Tudor Dixon?
Me, including.
All right. So Tudor Dixon, who ran against Governor Gretchen Whitmer in 2022. Okay, you've heard that name, right?
Yeah.
She's the great, she's like the White Witch of the North, you know, from Narnia. She's not popular. So Tudor's back in the spotlight, hinting at a 2026 run, possibly for governor again or for U.S. Senate. Dixon has stayed active in conservative media and grassroots organizing, so he's trying to stay relevant. He's trying to keep his name ID up. Okay, why does it matter? Because Michigan is and always has been a battleground state. With Biden's popularity declining, the GOP's got a real shot to flip Michigan. I know a lot of folks up in Michigan, family of mine, okay, go Tigers and Lions, you would be extremely satisfied to see Michigan come back home, right? Come back to America, Michigan. You could do it. Tudor, he could play a major role. If she learns from her last campaign, she could be the next governor. I think that would be amazing. So I'm not too familiar with her last race, but I do think that Michigan is extremely important in the national conservative strategy, because like we saw during this last election, the Democrats lost every single swing, right? Like, we just obliterated them. And this is the time to advance even further. It's not time to back down. It's not time to kick back and relax. You know, we talk about this all the time on the show here, that we have 4 years to prep for the next round, and it's coming. And the left is preparing, and they're learning lessons. We need to take ground while it's open, right? And Michigan is a battleground coming up here, 2026. I'm really praying and hoping that Tudor Dixon can get in. We would love to see Gretchen, not be there anymore.
Yeah, so this kind of goes to my point that we're talking about. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, right? Your average voter doesn't... Your average voter who is living paycheck to paycheck or relies heavily on an industry like in Michigan, the auto industry, they don't really care about Republican, Democrat, right? They probably, you know, very likely had a, you know, you have a person who maybe voted for Obama and then now has voted for Trump. What they're looking at is, what are you going to do for me? Right. And so when you have two candidates, Biden and Trump, or Harris and Trump, right? Trump is promising to bring the auto industry back to Detroit, which has been obliterated. Or you have Biden and Harris who are sending those jobs overseas. The person in Michigan is going to vote for whoever is going to basically allow them to have a job, right? So it goes back to my point about the kitchen table issues, right? The Democrat Party failed to win the issues that people care about when you sit down with them at their kitchen table. And that's why they lost a big swing state like Michigan. Now, like I've also said, hopefully Republicans can learn from the Democrats' mistake and not lose this opportunity, right? Like you said, it's not time to let off the brake. You know, now it's time to double down and you know, keep those people.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we'll be watching that race. And hopefully now, if you've never heard of them before, you know who she is, Tudor Dixon. Hopefully she's the next governor of Michigan. I mean, she wins the Senate. We'll take that too. Next up is Elon Musk meets with the Pentagon chief, Pete Hegseth. Now, this really isn't that exciting of a news at that line because, you know, he's up there all the time. But what is the meeting about? Well, he met this week with SecDef Pete Hegseth to discuss possible collaborations on national security initiatives, including cyber defense and space technology. Now, that's a big deal because technology is the new battlefield. Musk and his companies have been at the forefront of innovation, and his alignment with conservative administration this year and in the years to come could completely change the game for how America defends itself. You know, we had some questions here like, you know, what role should private tech companies play in national defense, et cetera. The truth is, private companies have played a role in defense since the 1700s, literally. I mean, since George Washington working with private companies to build ships and weapons, et cetera. The American spirit has always included a combination of military bureaucrats and the civilian population, the militias, you might say. I am very pro private organizations being a part of the nation because that's where you find the most competency. Unfortunately, and hopefully DOGE is working on this, but unfortunately, most instances that you can think of involving government services, they're just not the best, right? They've weaved a dangerous web for themselves of diversity and equity, and you can't do this to me, and I'm vested. And, you know, have you ever been to the DMV, you know, or whatever you call it in whatever state you live in, Department of Motor Vehicles? And do you see that, you know, when you, like, when you go to use your cell phone or, you know, the, like, you notice how things on the civilian side seem to work every time you turn them on, and yet in the government, it's constantly, you know, our website's down or this didn't work or it'll take 6 months for us to respond. You know, gosh, don't even get me started on dealing with the state of California. And the bureaucracies here are so inefficient and horrible. I mean, they are horrible. And that's mostly because of the first part of our conversation today. All these insider threats that get into government, this sort of mind virus on the left of I hate America, everyone's racist, and you know I deserve everything. It's a very selfish perspective. Well, when you take those UC Berkeley students and they work for the Department of Education, or you know who are we dealing with this week that was just super annoying? Unemployment Department.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, these people are like straight up Marxists. They're horrible, horrible policies. And then these bureaucrats make rules. They're not elected, and they're not making laws. They're making rules that then place heavy burdens on the citizens and businesses, right? Because leftists are not pro-business. They're all about redistribution of wealth, and companies flee blue states. So do I think it's great that Elon Musk is working with them? Yeah, of course I do. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. So I don't know, you know, we'll see where that goes. I don't know what that means. I mean, that's not surprising to me. I mean, the defense industry alone, you're talking billions of dollars in indefinite contracts. Maybe they're not as loud or outspoken as Elon Musk, but they've always been there. And like, honestly, good for Elon taking a stand for values and, you know, standing for conservative truths. I want to hear more of that from tech leaders and business owners, right? I prefer the Elon Musk approach than these companies like that you don't know who's leading them because they're just sitting in the shadows, you know, like making their money. It's like, okay, well, at least you're a philanthropist and you're doing something. Anyways, let's get through these last two. The next line is Vince Haley and the Conservative Brain Trust. All right, hold on, because I'm included in this group here. You may have not heard his name before, but Vince Haley is one of the most influential advisors shaping Trump's current platform. Vince Haley, especially on cultural and domestic issues. A recent Wall Street Journal piece highlighted his behind-the-scenes role. Now, why does this matter, this Vince Haley guy? Haley and other voices like Ben Shapiro, Hugh Hewitt, they represent the sort of intellectual backbone of the conservative movement. Shapiro, you know, as a pundit, but there are many, many others. Understanding their influence gives insight into where the movement is headed next. So I think it's really interesting that you have someone like Vince Haley pushing the administration behind the scenes, because we want people like that, right? This is akin to placements like Dan Bongino now being the director of the FBI, Kash Patel at DOJ, etc. Trump did it right. he quite literally drained the swamp. I mean, he did not, as far as I'm aware, like no mainstream establishment person was welcomed back into the fold. I mean, he just cleaned house. And that is what America so desperately needed. And these are the voices that we need behind the bureaucrats, right? Now, by comparison, the left does the same thing. But instead of pro-American conservatives concerned with economic growth and American values and core family, you have the exact opposite, like we saw in the Biden administration. We had like trans TikTok dancers. Okay, so there was some comparative version of the Vince Haley behind the Biden administration pulling the puppet strings on, you know, we should have, you know, trans flag day at the White House. And, you know, just, oh my gosh, you remember the Biden regime? It was just horrible. It's I mean, a lot of us had PTSD from that era, but.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to even with the Elon Musk thing, right? The left is sort of irate that all of these people have this influence when they've done the same thing for decades. I mean,
decades.
We mentioned in the past, George Soros had his hand and money in every major DA case across America. So the difference now is the left lost and they don't like Elon Musk being in charge. Well, too bad. Go win an election in 4 years and you can change the course of the country if that's what you want to do. My guess is if the Republican Party and Donald Trump continue to make these cultural changes the right way, it's going to be a long time before the Democrats win again. I'm not saying it's going to be a long time. I'm saying if they do it the right way, it could be a long time before the Democrat Party gains control back. Now, the difference is it goes towards it all goes back to the kind of like, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach him how to fish, feed him for a lifetime. We're trying to influence culture in a way that people are self-sufficient. The American dream has been lost. It's hard to win over a culture when they feel like they can't get ahead, right? And I think that the left was able, specifically in 2007, 2008 timeframe, the economy was tanking. Obama rises up as, you know, this hope for America, and I think people latched onto that. Well, the Democrats didn't hold up their end of the deal, right? They kept these people basically imprisoned and under the thumb of the Democratic Party, whereas Republicans are saying, no, we're not going to just give you a fish. We're going to teach you how to fish so you can, you know, feed yourself. I think that's the difference there when you're trying to make the argument about, well, you guys are just doing the same thing you complained about. No, I would say it's much different in the outlook and in the eventual outcome. What the Democratic Party wanted to do is what killed hundreds of millions of people in the 20th century. What we're trying to do is create a free and prosperous society. Exactly. Or not create it. It's already here. America is
preserve it.
Yeah, we're trying to preserve it. This was created, you know, 200 plus years ago by very brave men who fought and died for this institution that we have. And like I think Benjamin Franklin said, right, you know, a democracy or a republic if you can keep it. So we're trying to keep it.
Well, and guys like Vince Haley are very important because policy without vision is just paperwork. And Vince Haley understands that culture drives policy, like what we've been harping on for years now, right? He's not out there for airtime. He's in the trenches crafting strategy that actually shifts worldviews. Now, we had this the first administration. You know, we have our friend Tony Perkins, who was involved in crafting policy with the State Department and others. So this time, though, it's a very strong, concerted effort by this administration to make this happen. I mean, for far too long, the right has treated elections like the finish line. And this is what I'm worried about right now, is that, you know, it's really just the beginning of the race. It's not the finish line. And we're going to go into the next election here in 4 years, and it's going to be even harder than it was the first time. The left does this. They play the long game. They win schools, entertainment, institutions. That's why we're asking, you know, should the right be investing way more in long-term cultural strategy? I mean, here at Defining Truth, our answer is yes, absolutely. That's exactly what needs to happen. We need more candidates. We need filmmakers, authors, teachers, professors, influencers. We need people who can articulate and shape narratives. And I just want to pause and say that's exactly what our goal here is at Defining Truth. You know, we're working on a conference coming up that we're trying to plan called Giant Slayers. I mentioned it last episode. Our whole purpose is to do exactly that. We want to raise up the next generation of these candidates, filmmakers, authors, teachers, influencers, and instruct them and equip them with the tools they need to defend American Christian Judaic values. The left started doing this, by the way, in the 1960s, even before. And look where it got them. Just look around you at the state of the country. So if we can learn anything from the left's cultural dominance over the past 50 years, it's that it didn't happen overnight. So, yeah, Vince Haley's doing a great job, and we need more of that continually. So our last headline here, free speech versus national security. This one, let's just blip this real quick. We talked about this last week.
I jumped the ball on this one.
we did, you know, last episode, if you want to go back and listen to episode 51, we talked about Mahmoud Khalil. It just kind of fit because there's some new, you know, I guess headlines related to the case. So if you listen to last episode, we talked about Mahmoud Khalil. He's a Palestinian student at Columbia University. He was arrested by ICE, Homeland Security, after allegedly leading pro-PLO protest with ties to Hamas. Some said this was free speech issue. Others argue it was about national security. And then we mentioned last week as well, the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, which has ties to terrorism, by the way, is now suing Columbia University for allegedly sharing student records with the Fed. See, this is what I'm talking about. This is the, where's the Committee on Un-American Activity? This should not be tolerated. That's not freedom. Our enemies should not be allowed to run organizations and go after Americans for defending our own country. That is asinine. It's ridiculous. And why does it matter? Because this case touches everything. Terrorism, campus radicalism, free speech, limits of tolerance. Now CARE, this Islamic organization, is turning on Columbia University, which really is their ideological ally. Columbia University is no right-wing organization by far. It's just showing how unstable the left's alliances are and dangerous. So anyways, if you want to know more about that, I would say go back, listen to episode 51. We went a little more into CARE and Mahmoud Khalil and that whole situation. It's ongoing. You want the short of it? We're pro him being gone. So that's, you know, that's our opinion. He needs to go. Terrorism should not be allowed, especially if you're here on like with permission from another country. We absolutely zero tolerance for non-citizens coming in and acting like America's enemies in our own borders. We have to be the stupidest people in the world to permit that. But the left, the Democrats want you to. Anyways, I digress. All right. So the last thing we're going to talk about today is, and some of you may have seen it on Instagram or Telegram or Facebook, different sources. It was a leaked document that we understand now is quite old. We don't know exactly what the document was related to, as in like what incident. This was a document from an NGO, non-governmental organization, called Friends of Democracy. And these, it has to do with coordinated protest and law enforcement. I want to touch on that specifically. That part is really important. So what this is instructions. These are documents instructing paid protesters on how they are to conduct themselves during protest. Now, Brandon, you know, I personally, as a deputy sheriff, was involved in riots myself there. I was on the front lines in La Mesa, California, when there was riots there. I witnessed a coordinated effort by those on the left to attack city buildings, to blow up fire trucks. They burned half the city to the ground. They violently attacked. I think 400 plus deputies were injured during those riots. They were setting the city joint admin / police station on fire with many of the civilian admin staff stuck inside. I was with the sheriff's department at the time. We received a mutual aid call for assistance. That's when La Mesa Police Department, which is a much smaller organization, could not handle the violence coming from the left. And so we raced down there to assist, as did numerous other departments. But what struck me the most was the coordination I'm talking about. I mean, these guys were acting like troop commanders. There was clearly designated leaders. We saw individuals on top of rooftops with communication, like expensive, good Motorolas. Something on them, like we noticed one guy was wearing a cowboy hat, kind of designating him as different from the rest of the crowd. And he was calling movements out. You know, he would observe from a high point, just like a commander on a battlefield would move certain players on the field to a different location. In the aftermath, you know, intel revealed that a lot of the rocks and explosives that they used were pre-staged, indicating there was planning and coordination and intelligence involved in these riots. So for a long time before this document leak, I had always believed that it was fairly evident that these organizations were being funded, right? Now, it's hard to find empirical direct correlation, but we know for a fact, you mentioned George Soros. Soros funds many of these NGOs. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And so really, the degree of separation is kind of like the mafia going, I didn't do anything. It was my lieutenant, right? Well, Soros funds organizations, like, I don't know this one specifically, but like Friends of Democracy. And then Friends of Democracy goes out and does something like this. So then Soros can say, well, I'm not funding riots. It's like, well, what do you think they're doing with the money?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so I would encourage you guys to look up the Friends of Democracy leak so you can look at these documents yourself. I'll try here in post to throw them up on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see what I'm talking about. But I mean,
I just want to say, yeah, too, anybody on the left who thinks that like there's no way that this is happening is naive. You saw it firsthand. We were at a seminar last month where they talked about how anarchists operate, right? It's all very organized, all the way dating back to like groups like the Weather Underground. Like this is how they operate. You know, now sometimes they take advantage of well-meaning protests, right? They come in and disrupt a well-meaning, organized permitted protest. But like, for something like this to happen, where an NGO is sending people in to disrupt society and have an organized way of doing it, is not, I mean, just like look at history. Like, it's not out of the norm. It happened across BLM riots, which is what you're referring to with La Mesa. You know, it's happened with, you know, Occupy Wall Street. You know, this is nothing new. It's, you're just mad because basically you got caught.
And 100%. And again, if you're not looking at these documents right now, let me just explain what they are. These are instructions. These were instructions to people on how to conduct themselves during riots and protests. And the top of the document, it says Friends of Democracy, identifying the organization. And
stupid.
I know. And it talks about, I mean, you have to read it yourself. There's a lot of information on there, but it talks about like how they're to conduct themselves when dealing with law enforcement, you know, that they're not to get aggressive under certain circumstances, but then they'll have guides on when they can be more aggressive. They're not allowed to bring certain signs unless they're being paid. And it talks about a pay schedule and how they'll be paid and percentages and for what type of behavior they'll be paid for. Mind you, Friends of Democracy, just so you know who this is started as a political action group. It was a PAC. And they've been active in supporting progressive policies for a long time. They initially founded as a PAC advocating for campaign finance reform, which is laughable. But later they were linked to direct activist support, which is what they've kind of morphed into. They, by the way, of course, publicly disavowed connections to violent protest, but have been accused repeatedly of funding these disruptive demonstrations. So the leak of this document is like big news for the liars, right?
Just to go back real quick to your whether or not it's funded by George Soros. So according to PolitiFact.com, Friends of Democracy is a political action committee founded not by George Soros, but by Jonathan Soros, the son of noted liberal activist George Soros. So that was an easy guess on your end.
There you go. Yeah. So and Soros, man, we should do a whole episode on that guy's regime. But so they're involved. So some of the past protest connections for this particular group, Friends of Democracy, have been, you know, 2020, lots of civil unrest, claims that Friends of Democracy was funding certain groups during the George Floyd protests. So again, if you search online, you'll get all kinds of left-wing propaganda saying, this isn't true. It's a conspiracy. There's no empirical data. There's no empirical evidence. Even though like we've witnessed it ourselves, it was hard, like I said, like the mafia, it was hard to connect the murder on the street to Al Capone, right? So everyone's kind of like, yeah, well, we know Al Capone's the boss and he's doing it, but since you couldn't prove it, you know, the mafia still exists. Okay, so this document's a big deal because it corroborates our allegations for years that they were doing this. And they were accused of funding protesters, you know, in 2020. Then in 2021, the Capitol protest, allegations arose that the group helped organize counter mobilizations, again, funded through Soros and others. Other recent activities suggest that they provided funding for protest groups in 2022 and 2023 regarding Supreme Court decisions and election protests. So they got into the like mass chaos business, right? So this document gets leaked. I don't know where exactly it originated from, but it was publicly posted by the Department of Government Efficiency on DOJ's official channels. That's where I first saw it. The document details financial disbursements, escalation strategies for the protesters that are being paid, and perhaps most notably, insider law enforcement coordination. Now, this one really caught my eye. So the documents talk about how to interact with law enforcement. They use the quick code LE, but then it goes on to say that they have intelligence from friendly LE sources. In other words, that there are members of law enforcement that are feeding them intelligence and information concerning this you know, protest or whatever. Now, again, not news to you or I. We talk about this all the time. We've produced these cesspool educational institutions that continually pump out anti-American people, and then they go and they get jobs in the government. So when you find yourself protesting with Antifa on Monday, and on Wednesday you work for LAPD, you know, it's hard to bifurcate your brain. If you believed that America is an evil, you know, capitalist environment that needs to be destroyed. It's like, well, obviously when Friends of Democracy comes around, they ask you for intel, you're going to help them out.
Well, and just to be clear on that too, do you think that this would be more like somebody on the admin side of things, or maybe an analyst, as opposed to like a LAPD officer, or you think it could be either?
All of the above. It really depends on, you know, this generation has been difficult to read. We have a lot of great young folks in this generation, and it really depends on how they were raised and where they went to school and where their worldview lies.
Yeah.
I saw this firsthand working for the federal government. I mean, the depth of anti-American sentiment in the government is significant. Now, I would say it's an equal representation. It's a comparison to the country itself, right? Like, when people want to criticize government agencies, it's usually a mirror of the country. So
yeah, the culture.
Yeah. Like the culture is like 50-50. Like there's a lot of people that love our country still and oppose, you know, these progressive Marxists. And then there's others that don't. Well, then the government's no different. You have people in there that are Democrats and you have people that are, you know, pro-American. So yeah, I just find it interesting that the document specifically names the fact that there are friendly, quote, LE, in other words, members of the department. the document also talked about rules of engagement. So like how they're to use props like sticks and bottles, et cetera, only after other demonstrators had, quote, started it. It limits physical engagement. Like it talks about below the neck and no kicking unless you're provoked. And it's just super crazy. And it also talks about strict OPSEC, which this document is proof of how dumb they are, because this is the opposite of OPSEC.
This whole thing kind of reminds me of the Hamas documents that got leaked, that they found on the bodies and how coordinated that was. You know, they all had the plans. It's like, yeah, good OPSEC there.
Yeah. So anyways, we'll see where it goes. I mean, Doge posted it. For those of us who have been in the industry or paid attention, it's not really news. It's just a piece. It's another tool on your belt if you're debating or having a discussion. Because for years, you know, our friends on the far left have said, you can't prove it. You know, you can't prove that Al Capone instructed the murder of his rival gang member. You know, and now this is just like a piece for the cultural, you know, district attorney to say, well, here you go. You know, like here's evidence of an NGO paying people to do this type of behavior. And let's be clear, like this isn't like, you know how CNN and many others tried to play it, the mostly peaceful. Like this was terror. This was domestic terror.
Isn't it funny too?
Things.
Isn't it funny too? How just to that point, right? You can't prove that Al Capone did it, yet you can prosecute Donald Trump for a filing error on a tax document.
Unbelievable.
Like, unbelievable. Why should he, as the head of the company, be responsible for a clerical administrative error, yet you can't link Al Capone is clearly responsible, or whoever it is responsible for that organization. Like, the irony there is, like, I don't know how you can not see that. Like, it's kind of funny.
Well, it really is in your face, and the left, as we've mentioned now, have been waging a cold war for decades. They have not trying to hide anything. It's us. It's mainstream establishment Republicans, the kind that we deal with like here in California, right? Incessantly. We need to drain it. You gotta wake up. Conservatives have to jump on the bandwagon and realize we're in a war. We're in a cultural war right now. The left has been for decades
I think the left knows it, right? It's no surprise to the left.
Of course they know it. And we've just refused to pay attention to any of the things that they've targeted. Like we talk about all the time, the left targets families and, you know, sexuality and things. And those on the right have never stopped to ask why. Why do they target those areas?
Yeah, I think folks on the right, which until recently I think has tended to be an older generation, they kind of missed the, like, we're not disagreeing on tax rates and how we're going to, you know, house homeless people. Like, we're talking about really, really deep moral issues. And at some point, that generation sort of lost that and got left behind, because you still have, and we see it all the time, God bless them, but we see guys or gals who at some of these Republican meetings want to talk about, like, you know, Reagan's 1980 whatever tax policy. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but nobody cares. Like, we're fighting for our children.
Yeah,
we're well beyond that. We can get back to that once we stop mutilating our kids.
Yeah, the conservatives have their own army of, like, old Joe Bidens that they continually put up as candidates and just kind of refuse to do what Trump is now demonstrating on a national level, that at some point you got to disconnect from something that has not worked for decades and go in a different direction. Anyways, we've covered a lot today. Casey DeSantis, conservative strategy, Trump's bold cultural agenda, the new F-47, chaos unfolding on college campuses. The bottom line, it's not just news. It's the battle for the soul of our nation. Every headline is a reminder that truth is under attack, and it's our job to stand for it. That's why Defining Truth exists, to cut through the noise, equip believers with clarity and courage, and to raise up a generation of giant slayers, leaders who aren't afraid to face the cultural Goliaths of our time. So if it hit home for you today, do me a favor, like, share, subscribe on YouTube, Instagram, X, anywhere else you see us, and encourage others to do the same. If you believe in this mission, you can consider partnering with us to help push this message further than the algorithms want to go, because that's a whole nother battle. And we're not done. We're just getting started. So until next time, stand firm, speak truth, and never back down.